Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the P1 podcast with Matt and Tommy. Today is a glorious day. The Australian Grand Prix. We all thought, oh, am I setting my alarm for another Max domination? No. No, we weren't, Tom Bellingham. Could Carlos Sainz domination bore fans is more the question we are going to be leading with, I think, into this.
I think so. Yeah, Verstappen's clearly washed. It's been, as I tweeted, 3 races in, and we've still not heard the Dutch national anthem on a Sunday. So, look, Max is the new Mr. Saturday and just can't deliver on Sunday, can he?
Oh, wow. That's crazy. Now, before we dive into all of the shenanigans that went on during the Australian Grand Prix, we need to shout out some P1 live show tickets. If you want to come see me and Tommy live, where we reflect on some crazy stuff, we will. It's a bit saucier, isn't it, the live show, Tommy? We, you know what I mean? We get a little bit loose, and we've got lots of things to talk about, both off and on track, which we'd love for you to come along to the P1 live show in London, Cambridge and Bath. It's only a few weeks away now, so please come along if you'd love to. We would love to have you there, and the link will be all over our social media. It's in our link tree. Type in P1 live show, I'm sure it will come up. Lots of good stuff, so yeah, thank you so much. Right, Tommy, hit us with your most memorable moment.
Well, I think it has to be Max Verstappen's DNF, something I've not said in a very long time.
Two years ago. This race.
Yes, this race 2 years ago. It's been a long old while since Max Verstappen DNF. And yeah, it was a big surprise once he got into the lead at turn one. It very much felt like, you know, we've seen this one before. Game over. Max has won. Brilliant. And then, the smoke coming out the back of the car. Obviously, Sainz got him. And it was like, hang on a minute. That's a lot of smoke. And it was like, oh, no, that's a lot of smoke. I think we both thought it was an engine failure at first.
Then I put on my technical glasses and I was like, that looks like a brake.
And, yeah, what a dramatic way to end his race so early on. We'll get into this later. I think it is a shame, however much many people, even myself included, would have liked to have seen someone else win. I think it is a shame that he did actually retire from the race, because it maybe could have been more exciting in that way.
Absolutely. I think that is a really important conversation to have, because I think at that specific moment when everything went wrong for Max Verstappen, we looked at that leaderboard and went, we've got 2 McLarens and 2 Ferraris fighting for the win. And had that come to fruition, we wouldn't be sitting here going, would the race have been better with or without Max Verstappen?
We were waiting for Singapore part 2, weren't we, with all 4 of them
exactly.
battling for, in a train.
That is what was basically teased to us. That did not happen. And it was actually a Carlos Sainz domination in this race. And not just whether it would be better with Max or not. Sergio Perez came out after the race, albeit not knowing that he had some floor damage, saying that Max Verstappen would have absolutely not won the race had he still been in it. So that, you know, you throw that in there, you take what Sergio Perez says as gospel, and you go, wow, we actually might have had a race here. I know that you're shaking your head, you're thinking that Perez is probably trying to save face here because his race was pretty poor, but all I'm getting from this championship back on, and Ferrari going to win.
I don't think it would be easy. I think that's for sure. I think what we can take away from it is that Ferrari are a lot closer than we thought. I think it would have been fascinating to see what would have happened if Max hadn't had the problem and he'd been behind Sainz. I think if it had been leading, yeah, he might have won the race. And we know how difficult it is to pass here. But then that that being turned around the other way, I think that's what I was really looking forward to when Verstappen was behind. It's like, right, now we finally get to see him race someone. And unfortunately, you know, the brake went completely and it did kind of ruin the race, really, because no one could challenge Sainz. And it would have been fascinating to see if Max could have got through the field, or it would have been Max like right on the gearbox of Sainz, and then maybe it would have happened in the pit stops, who knows, but it would have maybe been a bit more intrigue. But we thought that would be the case with Charles Leclerc, but it didn't happen. But I mean, the championship is looking unbelievably close.
For a season we've written off.
If you'd have said, if you'd have said after three races that Charles Leclerc would be 4 points behind Max Verstappen, I think you'd have sold a limb.
Peggy 18 is all that would be. My goodness me. Yes. We're not going to get too excited about that, although I definitely will be, I'm sure. Of course, there is a conversation to be had about Leclerc, which I'm sure we'll get into. But yeah, Verstappen DNFing, it was a shame. It showed that Max not being there does not equal, it's not a perfect formula to a great race. It's as simple as that. Question from M_NorrisGasly3. Do you think we'll see more Red Bull reliability issues throughout the year with this new car concept? It's an interesting question. I did find it funny that Max basically said it was like driving with the handbrake on, and yet he was still in the DRS of Carlos Sainz before it blew up, which just shows, yes, Max would definitely, absolutely not have fought for the win this race. But in terms of that, it is interesting because, of course, they have gone down a different route. And also, for Japan, it was rumoured that they were going to bring the concept of zero side pods. And will that change the way in which they perhaps view this now? Of course, it is just, they will analyse it, they will put the forensics through it, and I'm sure they'll find the reason as to why. They've not really had any other issues to really kind of properly scramble their brains over. So I'm not sure we're going to knee-jerk this to a case of Red Bull now have bad reliability. But of course, it's gonna be an issue, especially when we were just complaining only the last weekend that, or the weekend before, F1, no one has reliability issues anymore.
No one has reliability issues. And then the two drivers that never retire, Hamilton and Verstappen, had retirement.
Yeah, so perhaps it was just a unique set of circumstances, which I'd probably lean more towards. But look, if he has another one and Charles Leclerc leads the world championship, man is not complaining about that one.
It is going to be interesting to see how it goes with the reliability. You do wonder with a brake fire that he had and a brake issue, it's probably unlikely. I think I'd be more concerned if I was Red Bull if it was, you know, overheating problems or because obviously they've done this very radical concept of and there's been loads of questions over the cooling. But the fact is that a brake's exploded, and you wonder, you know, there was talk after the race at time of recording, we don't know yet, but, you know, it could have been something when they were putting the car together or maybe
or
something's
got
locked. Yeah,
something,
there's plenty. So we don't know until we see, but yeah, it's one incident at the moment, but it does show how much it can change with one DNF this early in the season, because, like you say, we were writing off the season, and now the gap is, I think, 11 points separating the top four, which doesn't seem like a lot at all. So they can't afford to keep having mechanical failures, because, you know, the way Verstappen's driving, it is 25 or 26 points down the drain. So that's a lot of points in a championship fight.
Yeah, and then also, of course, the added points gained from other drivers as well, with Max DNFing. So it is a big swing. And then you start to think, oh, could Perez do a Rosberg? And then he finishes fifth, and you go, okay, maybe not. Question from P1 Patreon member Nicola. With Max out of the race, did this race prove that races aren't boring because of Max dominance, but mainly because of huge, heavy cars, rubbish regulations? Yeah, I think it goes back to what I mentioned, that Formula One is not saved if Max isn't there. There is much more fundamentally wrong with where these regulations have gone. 2022, we've already said, that was great, but Formula One teams have developed their cars since then, and they cannot follow. See George Russell crashing on the last lap because Alonso went a little bit naughty, and you just saw the amount of downforce that he lost immediately. Ollie Bearman said he was shocked by how much downforce he lost, and you could see it visibly when he was in traffic at the last race. So it's yeah, Max not being there does not equate that. I think that it has to have a perfect harmony. We have to have it all come together. If we'd had the fight for P2 when they start cooking, we could have had the greatest race in a very long time. Singapore, for example, that was an amazing race to watch. But look, it didn't happen. We had hardly any cars in DRS. Wheel-to-wheel battling was scarce, to say the least. And yeah, it is down to the heavy cars, the rubbish regulations, and I can't believe we're saying this because we were so hyped when these first came out.
We really were. And, you know, Albert Park isn't normally the best track for overtaking, but you look at Formula 2 is now racing on there, which had a couple of fantastic races, lots of incidents, lots of overtaking. And it just shows that lighter, more nimble cars can race each other. That was the most disappointing thing for me. And I'm glad that people... I've agreed in some sense, because I didn't want to be the Verstappen fan on the podcast that's like, oh, it's rubbish because Max didn't win. But
wait, you're a Verstappen fan?
I know. But this is the thing. It, just because he's out the race doesn't suddenly mean that we're going to get the best race ever, because it certainly wasn't. It was disappointing to see that it was still very much 2x2 with a lot of the cars. And that is... quite insane, because normally in regulations the field gets bunched up a lot closer after a few years, and then normally when they change the regulation, that final year is when it's actually really close. But if anything, you know, Ferrari 1-2, McLaren 3-4, you know, you had loads of teammates,
but slower.
Ferrari 1-2, teammates running together and then running together, but not enough to pass. You know, it's so hard to overtake. The only main overtaking that we've seen a lot this year has been, you know, someone like Ollie Bearman, who had a big performance advantage that he was driving one of the topper teams and he was lower in the pack, so he was being able to pass cars. But when it's close between them, yeah, they just can't seem to overtake, and it's very disappointing. Very disappointing.
It certainly is. And also, you know, Australia have 4 DRS zones, but when you can't get within a second, it doesn't matter. So watch Australia in 2025, just the entire track is a DRS zone. That's what they're going to announce next time to try and make something happen. Or maybe just everyone... What if... All right, I'm cooking. Hold on.
They all have a
DRS usage, but the lower you are, the more DRS you get. Okay, so Logan Sargeant could just use DRS all the time. Max Verstappen.
Reverse DRS has been discussed.
Doesn't even have it installed.
You use it to catch up, basically.
And then you get within a second and then you lose it.
Or, radical idea, don't make the cars absolutely massive and heavy. But anyway.
I knew that was coming. The way that you teed that up. God, you're such a beautiful comedian. Right, my most memorable moment now then. And we're going to bask in the glory. A Ferrari 1-2 that I'm 95% happy about. yes, of course, it's not what I expected. Waking up this morning to watch Carlos Sainz win the race and Charles Leclerc finish P2. But it is a welcome sight. And as I said in funniest tweets, and I'll say it again, Carlos Sainz, fully deserving of the victory. What a comeback from surgery, from resting, to then, you know, taking the start of the weekend quite easy and into practice. And you could tell that, you know, it's not 100% peak fit condition. You can't be after that. But performing amazingly in qualifying to then deliver in the race. I mean, the one time Charles Leclerc doesn't go on the blooming front row is the time Max Verstappen has an issue. It's actually ridiculous, but every time the opportunity is in front of Carlos, he delivers. It's as simple as that. There's no bottling, there's no getting a little bit quaky, I could win the race. The tenacity takes over, the racer within him. When he sees an opportunity to win, he takes it. And what better of a marketing opportunity for Carlos Sainz? And we've spoken about, where's Carlos going to go? Oh, okay, steak might not be a bad option to then go to Audi and then bed your roots in there. Screw that now. I don't want that man anywhere near those dustbins. I don't care anymore. Even if it's just a year at Merck and then they get Kimi Antonelli in and then Carlos goes to Audi. Don't touch that green neon bin with a barge pole, Carlos. Don't do it, all right? Because I can't see him in that car for a year because it would just be painful. But yes, a Ferrari 1-2.
Yeah, Carlos delivering again. Like you said, he delivers. Maybe his nickname should be the postman. Maybe that's going to be a thing.
Oh, for God's sake. It's not Ian Poulter in golf, mate. You know what I mean?
Like, is that his nickname?
Yeah.
But no, hopefully that doesn't catch on because it's terrible. yeah, the fact that he's done it again, it's amazing. I bet you mentioned about Leclerc being like, oh, for goodness sake, you know, Charles had so many pole positions and the one time that he has that qualifying mistake. And equally, there's going to be so many other drivers on the grid that think the same. Now they've seen Carlos win again. That, you know, I'm sure Lando Norris is thinking, oh, why have we not started the season as good as we were last year? Because look how many P2s he got. Mercedes thinking, oh, for goodness sake, why didn't this happen? Fernando Alonso probably the same, like, oh, we were really good at this point. We were the second quickest team at this point last year. I'd won a race. So, yeah, it's... But back to Carlos, criminal, like I said it yesterday, that he shouldn't not be without a drive, and he also shouldn't be in that absolutely useless Kick Sauber having 40-second pit stops because he's had enough of them at Ferrari. So,
question from Sydney XF1. Do you think a race like this is possible again? Is Ferrari still the second fastest? I mean, yes, it's quite clear that Ferrari are second fastest with the fact that they 1-2'd this race, but also I think it is, yeah. Red Bull aren't clear down the road. Perez sort of alluded, and again, I'm taking his word as gospel, Ferrari are going to win the world championship, but he also mentioned about the fact that it was quite a unique tarmac or something or whatever, and it wasn't working well with the tyres and yada, yada, yada. So it might just be that Australia has been a little bit of an anomaly for Red Bull. But yes, that's the thing. Like, Max just needs to have a problem, and it is possible, because that fight for P2, as we've constantly lauded, you take Max out of the equation, that's a fight for P1. So it's as simple as that. And I think that we will get that over the course of this year now. I also believe that Japan will be quite possibly the most dominating race we've ever seen from any man ever, because Max did not look happy after he got out of the car, which is fair enough. You know, even though he's won so many, the man is competitive. He turns up every single weekend to win, and that's why he's had these incredible streaks, runs of form, whatever you want to call it. So yes, it is possible. It's going to happen again, and Charles Leclerc is going to put it on the front row. And as well, I've just realised, Tommy, that had Charles Leclerc won this race, my prediction was on of no poles and one win. Yeah. And he also would have won. He would have been leading the world championship.
He would have.
But that is fine, because I'm happy for Carlos, and I am. Like, I am a devout Charles Leclerc fan. I'm also obviously a Ferrari fan, but I can appreciate when my driver got beaten. And he did.
It's funny you mentioned about the Max revenge tour. You said to me that it was Japan, wasn't it? Was the next race after Carlos won in Singapore. Have you seen those memes where, like in football, when a team loses, someone goes on FIFA and they win like 40-0 against the other team? That's going to be Max Verstappen in iRacing lobbies tonight, where he's just like absolutely...
You were
winning everything.
Yeah, don't go on iRacing tonight if you want to win. But what I will say also is that maybe Liberty Media have seen this and gone, so Suzuka, how would you like 12 races next year?
Yeah, that's the secret.
Just to alternate, and that is the cure for Formula One, is having Suzuka as the next race.
Maybe, although it's not, because it's funny that they said, do you think a race like this is possible again? I think Ferrari... I do genuinely think that Ferrari, there may be the odd races where they are on par with Red Bull. I still take the stuff that Perez said with a pinch of salt, particularly because I think there are a lot of races last year where Max, potentially it was a bit closer than we thought, but Max made it look boring and dominant, like the car was miles ahead of everyone else. But Ferrari, they're doing a brilliant job, it has to be said. We talked about the team principal situation and how it's maybe unfair on Binotto, but And it's not all the team principal that does it, but what you have to say is that they're not that joke team. You know, they're delivering on pit stops at the moment. You know, they've won races. The team harmony looks good. I think Fred is doing a really, really good job. And now they won't have Carlos Sainz next year. But that's
right. They have, again. They have this new up and coming kid called Lewis Hamilton. So you know,
he's I'm washed. Sure he's barely beaten Ollie Bearman in the championship. So
mate, I can't believe you put that tweet out. That is the wildest thing I've ever seen. That is. Tommy has upgraded his fishing rod for Twitter. If you haven't seen it,
no one bit.
Tommy tweeted, Ollie Bearman is just 2 points behind seven times world champion at Lewis Hamilton after three races. What a season so far from the rookie. As soon as Team LH get hold of that, bro, you are cooked, finished.
Yeah, I'm barricading the doors right now.
Yeah, exactly. I'd log out if I were you. Next question, WBAFC underscore Cam. Does Carlos winning throw some questions in for 2025? Do you think Ferrari will start regretting their decision, or are they stronger with Charles and Lewis? No, I don't think there is a regret. We spoke about this a little bit, I think, didn't we, in either qualifying or practice podcast, where they've signed Lewis Hamilton. That, for the Ferrari brand and for the story, is a strong enough pull on its own, without anything else in the world. Having Hamilton in your team is huge for Ferrari. So no, there will be no regret for that. Charles and Carlos have been the strongest pairing, or one of the strongest pairings on the grid for quite some time. We see that. Like, they're both very good. I still absolutely back my statement that Carlos Sainz is a very, very good driver and is comparable to Charles Leclerc at times. And we saw that, and he was better than Charles Leclerc this weekend. Yes, there was the team radio call, wasn't there, where Charles was told to basically hold station. But he definitely wasn't being told to hold station at the end, and Carlos was still won the race. So it's not going to be a case of regret. I think it's a case of Ferrari going from a really good driver pairing to a really good driver pairing part two. But it's Lewis Hamilton, so you've got, you know, the greatest of all time. So it's there's no case of regret. I think Ferrari are going to be very excited to have Hamilton in the team. I think Lewis is going to have a new level of motivation as well going into there. So no, I don't think there's any questions. This good.
Yeah. It's looking like a very good decision that Hamilton's made already, with how Mercedes is going. But this question has come up many times this season. It came up after qualifying. It came up after Bahrain. And while I do think, you know, it's unfair to jump on it and basically sort of this is more about Carlos doing a very good job than it is Charles Leclerc doing a bad job. I think that's something that needs Agreed. To be mentioned. But that being said, I think my mind has changed a little bit on how much I rated Carlos Sainz in terms of, you know, Charles Leclerc being in that kind of top bracket, and I do think he is, but Carlos, I do think Leclerc is quicker over one lap, and I think that there's no doubt when it does happen, but I think it's not always about being the fastest in Formula One. I think Carlos has shown that it's about, you know, consistency, and I think if he has a car to his liking, I think he'd be an amazing driver to have in a world championship fight where he just picks up consistent, you know, points, because there's all this talk of like, oh, you know, Charles way quicker than Carlos or whatever, and then you look at the points at the end of the year and it is a lot closer, and yeah, Charles had some bad luck, but I think it's more about putting a bit more respect on Carlos's name really, and how good of a job he has actually done against a driver that is incredibly highly rated for a reason and is talked about like, you know, the next big thing. And the fact that Carlos has done so well against him and beaten him at times, and, you know, now he's got the same number of wins as Charles since they've been teammates, which blows my mind because that doesn't feel like it could be possible. Put some respect on Carlos because he's doing a really, really good job.
Yes. I think that's a very good way of putting it, is that Carlos needs to be raised up as opposed to Charles being pushed down in any way here, because what a performance from Carlos. I think that Charles is a faster driver. I will back myself there and say Charles Leclerc is a faster driver, whether that's over one lap or just innate raw speed. But I think when it comes to racecraft, into strategy, into the actual, taking opportunities with both hands, Carlos is as good as Charles in that regard. He is. That's why he's won as many races as you say, Tommy, as Charles has. Charles has had some bad luck. He's had some atrocious luck. And, I've already pointed out the amount of front rows he's had, and then the one time he doesn't get a front row, and we're all human, right? He made a mistake, didn't manage to execute like he usually does in qualifying, and then the opportunity arose. There has to be good fortune as well in Formula One, and it hasn't gone Charles' way this weekend, and it has with Carlos, and he's delivered. It's as simple as that. So Carlos needs lots of respect.
He does. And
that's it in a nutshell.
It's also a crazy thing to think about that Carlos is 11 points behind Max Verstappen in the title and missed a race. So if if he'd have done Saudi, you got to think he probably would have picked up like 15, at least 12 points. He could be leading the world championship now.
Yeah, but he's not. Charles Leclerc's a better driver. Right. Sorry, fanboy just took over then. I'm still hurting a tiny bit. Question. We're moving away from Ferrari now. Tony_E. Why did Alonso slow down so much just before George binned it? All right, Tommy, we got to talk about this.
Do
your
we?
Goat.
Fernando,
such a lovely driver. Well,
I never said he was lovely. That's no, why true. I like him.
God, you love bad boys, don't you, Tommy? Right, so Fernando Alonso on the last lap, battling George Russell. And I think on first glimpse, on first viewing, you think, oh, George is in the wall again, last lap, what's happened? Then you watched it once and you go, oh, he's binned it behind Alonso. Then you watch it again, and then you watch it with some telemetry, and then you go, Alonso's braked for a hairpin here, my guy, and it's a fast right-hander.
Yeah.
I am going to be on the side here of that was naughty. That was very naughty from Alonso. George Russell, and I know that there will be arguments of, well, it's just tactical, tactical. It's basically what K-Mag did in Saudi. But I think the difference here is that he suddenly slowed down as opposed to just lifting off into the corner. But the thing is, his tactic wouldn't have worked if he'd just lifted off and let George cruise up to the back of him. He did it to throw him off, to unsettle George's car so that he wouldn't get a great run with DRS. Now, as of recording right now, we don't have a decision of whether Alonso got a penalty or not. I will obviously check this just to make sure. But for me, I think that was very naughty. And I will go as far as to say that I think Fernando does deserve a penalty because of how that affected George's car and him full well knowing that that was what he wanted to do. So it was naughty. It was.
Yeah. What, to answer Tony's question, why did Alonso do it? Well, like you say, it's to gain an advantage because he knew that he's a sitting duck, really, with DRS. Before I maybe go into it, I do think that it is frustrating that you are kind of defenseless with DRS. I know we want to see overtaking, but this is kind of the eighth millionth reason why I think it should be pushed to pass rather than DRS, because the other driver should have a chance to fight. And I'm not saying it's right what Alonso did, but what I'm saying is it's a shame that you have to go to that many lengths and essentially break into a corner because you know if you're just driving normally, you've got no hope of defending. Like, and Alonso's from an era where we didn't have DRS, and if someone tried to overtake you, you could outbrake them, or you weren't just a sitting duck on the straight. But then to do it that extreme, yeah, it is pushing the limits. Am I surprised that Alonso's done that? No, because that's the kind of driver he is. He is a Schumi, a Verstappen that wants to get like every single extra, to make it happen, and sometimes pushes the boundaries. It's not against the rules to take a corner how you want to when you're the leading driver, but the fact that he's not eased off, he's actually hit the brakes twice from the look at the telemetry, is definitely thrown George off completely. And it's one of those incidents where if George gets through the corner absolutely fine, then it's probably not even a talking point. But
yeah,
because he's had this
dramatic
crash, and there's not actually a question about it, so maybe we mention it now as well. But a scary crash for George Russell, because he was obviously stranded in the middle of the track on a blind corner that is flat out, like you say. A very terrifying and uncomfortable watch listening to his team radio afterwards.
It certainly was, yeah. Hearing that team radio, you could hear the panic in his voice, because as you say, it's a fast corner. Of course, it is obvious that he's crashed because there's debris everywhere, but drivers will obviously, unless there's a yellow or whatever, not slow down. He's calling for a red flag. I saw some just trolls on Twitter saying that he was trying to secure his P7. It's like, no. He was fearing for his life because he was on his side in the middle of the track.
That's the worst thing for a Formula One driver, right? Is to be side on through a blind corner. You can't, like, all the worst accidents in history have been that incident.
Exactly. So
no wonder he was terrified.
Yeah, and the VSC was deployed. I think some people are saying, why was it not a red flag straight away? I think realistically it just needs to be neutralised. That's all you need to really do in that situation. Whether it was quick enough or not, I haven't looked exactly.
I don't think it was,
personally. It seemed like there was a slight delay in that. Thankfully, George was okay. But it wasn't actually a massive crash. It was just how he ended or where he ended on the track. So, thankfully for George, all okay. But the team radio was quite distressing to hear.
Yeah, I wonder if there'll be changes to that corner as well. In practice, we're there talking about, you know, we want drivers to be punished for their mistake and not loads of runoff. But at the same time, you can have a gravel trap there. It's just the fact that the wall kind of comes in. It's similar to, what happened. What Eau Rouge's problem was, where you had a barrier that was sort of like facing in towards the track. So as soon as you hit it, you dart back onto the track rather than, if you go off into that gravel trap, you can still be punished by going into that wall. It shouldn't then spit you back onto the track into a blind corner. So I reckon I'd be amazed if that corner is still the same way it is next year, personally.
Also, back to, I've just realised, George and Fernando are besties. Fernando's done that and stuck him in the wall. Probably didn't expect him to go into the wall, so I'm sure that wasn't what he had in his mind.
He probably did it thinking he'd just slow down, and then he's crashed, he's gone, oh God, I'm in trouble.
Oh no, we're not playing ping pong on the jet tonight.
Yeah.
So you've kind of skirted around the thinking, by the way, Tommy. Yeah. Does Alonso deserve a penalty, yes or no?
I need to see more of it.
No. Come on. Decide. You've seen it. I've watched you watch it. You've seen it.
This is basically
the stewards right now. Oh, I don't know.
We all love Fernando.
Is it bad? Is it not?
It's a bit naughty, isn't it? Hitting the brakes. So probably a penalty.
Bro braked twice for a corner. And he's like, yeah, it's a little bit naughty. Yeah,
a flat out corner. A little bit naughty. Yeah, they do. Yeah, I think they do need to. If I take my Alonso fanboy hat off, it's a driving standards thing that they need to make sure that they clamp down on and make a statement on, because, I don't agree with the fact that you should be defenseless when you're trying to defend. And it's a shame that Alonso has to go to those lengths to do it. But it's clearly not the right way to do it, because it can cause nasty crashes and incidents. So.
I'm sure there'll be much debate. I'm sure a lot of people will say, nope, that's just racing. Alonso was using his racecraft. And of course, the end result of everything is the reason why we are calling for a penalty, as you say, Tommy. If none of this had happened, then we wouldn't really be discussing it. But either or, it's a difficult one to decide which side for that. But yeah, Alonso, naughty, deserves a penalty. Let's see if he gets one. Next question, Shuka88. Haas said they would be last. Are they lucky? Were they joking? Or does Stake and Alpine just suck that much more? I believe it's a combination. I believe it's a Jeez, wow, Alpine, you really have rolled out a tractor, is probably one thing, thought that they've had. Stake, of course, as well, not being great. And I guess it's safer, or was at least safer, for the team principal, Komatsu, to come out at the start of the year and say, yeah, we're probably going to be last. Because if you under-promise and over-deliver, you look like a genius. And right now, he's looking like a genius. And it's worked out. Like, I think that Hülkenberg and Magnussen, of course, Magnussen had his own antics in Saudi. Some people agreed with it. Some people didn't. But I also think the drivers are doing quite well. I think that they're showing some good pace in this car. And it has delivered them 3 points.
Yeah, they finally seem to have got rid of the problems where they essentially had no or like insane tire wear. Because this wasn't even a race where the two drivers, you know, the problem with Haas last year was that they could do amazing things in qualifying and then they just fall back. But that race, they didn't have a particularly great qualifying session and they've ended up with 2 points. It just shows how much more important it is to have a decent race car, and they've clearly got that. You know, I've seen a lot of talk. I think it was even a subject of a DTS episode that team principals now probably more beneficial to have someone from an engineering background like a James Vowles or whatever that helps push them forward in that sense. And yeah, so far, Haas are looking a lot better, and I don't think anyone had on the bingo card that they would be sixth in the World Championship quite comfortably because no one else in that bottom thing apart from Yuki has scored a point. So
exactly. Amazing. And I guess whilst we're speaking about points and midfield to backmarker teams trying to score points, Albon, I think it was written in the stars that he would finish 11th, yeah. Wouldn't it? And of course, there's a lot of questions, which I think we should just discuss. Was it worth destroying the morale of Logan Sargeant in order to put your best foot forward and try and score points when they didn't score points? The benefit of hindsight is obviously something. But at the same time, if Sargeant had finished 11th, we all would have gone, well, Albon would have scored points then, wouldn't they? Oh, that was silly. Why didn't they
Albon 100%. Yeah, like, it's very true. Yeah, if Sargeant had finished 11th, it'll be like, oh, well, Albon would have got 9th. And
Albon would have won.
Yeah, I mean, James Vowles has already explained it so incredibly well.
So like eloquently.
He's like a computer. You know, like if you put into ChatGPT to explain the situation, the words he uses and stuff, it is like he's reading from a script, but it's just like...
Apart from when he does Drive to Survive, and then the man can't even speak.
He got nervous. He was like,
yeah,
oh,
bless him.
He clearly was like, oh, my family and friends will watch this. Whereas when he's at the track, he's just, yeah, boss mode.
Yeah, oh, he's what a man. But I did find, that interview that Ted did, did you feel like Ted did a bit too much with it? Did you see that?
Yeah,
he went like, I was like, my guy's telling you the answers here. And you're like, yeah, but Logan Sargeant, you know, he's a prospective world champion.
We all love Logan Sargeant, don't we?
Yeah, I'm the voice of the fans here. No, I just felt like
it was a bit awkward.
A bit
to
of
watch.
A strange interview. But either way, we're moving away from our next segment, which is biggest winner, driver or team. Oh, it's got to be Carlos Sainz, hasn't it? I mean, he has won quite literally the race, but also at life. Hopefully, Mercedes, maybe even Red Bull, who knows, might have some conversations. It's not like this is a new thing, though. We know that Carlos can deliver these kind of performances. We've seen it before, but it has to be Carlos for me.
I think it has to be Haas.
Hey. Okay.
Carlos, obviously, you know, because he is literally the winner. But the way Haas are going, they could have locked in 6 already. Signed, sealed, delivered.
My God, yeah. I mean, hopefully the 6th down to 10th place team score some points
so.
During the year. But yes,
but there's a big chunk of points
it is,
for a team like that when it's so hard to get points. So
I'm surprised you haven't spoken about your other boy, Yuki Tsunoda, dropping a little 8th place in, not even mentioned him once. I thought you would have at least put your burner account in and been like, is Yuki Tsunoda going to Red Bull now? But you haven't. I mean, he actually scored points.
I know.
Didn't finish 15th.
I know. I was so convinced that he wasn't going to
finish 2 seconds behind Stroll.
Yeah, amazing performance from Yuki. I'm so glad he's actually delivered in the race and had a good race to back up his qualifying performances. And yeah, he's maybe going a bit under the radar of how good a season he has, because of course we'll get into him when we say biggest loser, because I'm sure he's in the debate. But I think while Daniel Ricciardo is driving badly, I think Yuki Tsunoda is driving very well. It's not just that Daniel Ricciardo is driving badly, it's because Yuki Tsunoda is doing a really good job. And it's going to be really interesting what they do with him, because Red Bull have essentially put faith in him when some would argue they shouldn't have after his disastrous first year. So they've committed all that into him, and now he's showing this real quality and improvement. But they're losing Honda, and is he going to go anywhere? Like, what do they do with him? And would they want him in Red Bull? I personally think that it would be too much of a risk based on his personality, sadly. I'd love to see it. I'd absolutely love it. You know, in a dream world, I'd love to see it.
That'd be great, wouldn't it?
It's just, I just can't see it happening personally.
You just imagine Red Bull looking around going, wait, if we give a driver more than a year, they actually can develop and get better. No way.
Wow.
Wow, what? Never knew that. biggest loser then. My biggest loser. It's difficult, really, actually, this one. Obviously, Ricciardo is a shout, but he finished 12th, so it's not like the worst result ever. But, I mean, his teammates scored some decent points. You've, of course, got Ocon, who did biggest good surprise, and he finished 16th. So I'm feeling a little bit more angry, if anything, with that performance. George Russell, I don't think that's his fault, really.
It's Mercedes, though, isn't it? Surely. DNF.
Yeah, no, I mean, true, I guess. Yeah, Mercedes overall, yeah, it's a good shout. Yeah, let's go for Mercedes.
Lost a lot of ground on, you know, if you think that it was Mercedes versus Ferrari in that fight for P2 last year, you know, that's a massive result for Ferrari to get a 1-2 and Mercedes double DNF.
Mercedes,
as many points you possibly can. So
I think they're praying to finish any higher than fifth in the constructors at the moment. I think Ferrari are long gone now. And of course, you know, the big battle being, this was a great opportunity for Lewis Hamilton to extend his points lead over Ollie Bearman in this race, but it didn't happen.
Instead, Stroll's catching him at 1 point now.
I mean, Alonso's master plan of sending Russell into the wall then got Stroll a few more points as well. So obvious sarcasm. And now let's reflect on the predictions that we made on Wednesday. So as it stands going into this, it's 5-4 to you, Tommy. Yes?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, well done. No one cares. It's not the end of the season yet. So we're actually giving
no one
you
cares
points,
until
everyone.
I win.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 5-4 to you, Tommy, going into this. Biggest good surprise, Esteban Ocon. Now, I think it was very good surprising that he wasn't lapped twice. Thoughts?
I think you could argue it if the word good wasn't in there, because I was also surprised that finish behind two Saubers when they had a year-long pit stop each.
Hey, he also had a long pit stop, Tommy. Don't forget that when you rate him his performance, that Ocon had a 20-second pit stop.
Yeah, yeah.
So but without yeah, that, he would have finished in sixth. So, yeah, no points.
No points. I went for Oscar Piastri, which was looking good.
Mm. On the face of it as well, you'd think fourth, okay.
Yeah, like fourth, yeah, good job. But he ended up 30 seconds behind Lando.
To be fair, the virtual safety car did warp the final timings, I suppose, after that Russell crash, but still.
Yeah, yeah. But Piastri was looking quite good. And unsurprisingly, I think a few people in the crowd were a bit disappointed when, you know, Lando's on the podium, but I think the gap in the end shows that it was the right decision for McLaren to do, if not even though it's an unpopular one.
Absolutely. Biggest flop, I went for Sergio Perez, which I'm absolutely cashing in. Of course, he did pick up some floor damage when he was overtaking Alonso, I believe, but still, didn't really show much pace up until that point. And
I think that's shocking. Like, it's only one race, so I don't want to go too hard on him because he's had a very good start to the season. But my God, yeah, actually, in Biggest Loser, you got to think that Perez should be an option as well, because that is your chance to cash in, not only on just getting a win and getting your confidence back, but he'd be leading the world championship. He could have actually led the world championship by a massive margin if he'd won, because he's finished second in both the races. So it's a really big missed opportunity for Perez, and I think, yeah, really bad.
Certainly is. So that was mine, and that's definitely a point. What about you?
Speaking of really bad, Daniel Ricciardo, not good. Not good at all. It's not going well for him, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, he had a lot to do after qualifying, which was where he made that error with the track limits. And I think after that, you know, he finished 12th. So it's not like he finished behind Ocon. So I'm not going to slander him too bad. But his weekend was pretty much over by the fact he was 10 places behind his teammate.
I think I saw a lot of people sort of commenting on a post that RB did where they're like, great performance from Daniel. Came close to points. We'll get him next time, whatever. And it's kind of like, who are you kidding? Like, it's not a good weekend for him. He's finished behind both
Hasses. All three of those DNFs had finished. So, not a good weekend for Danny Rick. Pole position. Max Verstappen. Give me that point. Love that.
Same.
Perfect. And then shows that we should have been chefing a little bit with this, because we didn't really. Top three. In third place, I went for Carlos Sainz because I believed in him. And I'm so angry, Tommy. And I said this in Funniest Tweets because I realised it again. I was so close to putting in Biggest Good Surprise.
Yeah.
I literally wrote it in the sheet and went,
yeah, I remember seeing it. Like, oh,
nah, he's going to... I was like, nah, he's going to be feeling a little bit worse for wear. You know, we'll give him a chance. And he goes and blooming wins the race. That is... that's really annoyed me. But yeah, third place, no points.
I went for P3 Oscar Piastri, which... oh, it was close. Very close.
I love how you put it in capital letters as well. Really shouting that.
That wasn't me.
That you believed, believed Piastri. In second place, I went for Charles Leclerc, which is correct. But how am I not happy about that? How am I not happy about second place Charles Leclerc? Yes, so that's a point. Lovely.
I went for Sergio Perez. No.
No, definitely not. And Max Verstappen in first, and that did not happen.
And yeah, Max Verstappen... in first did not happen.
That's weird to say out loud, isn't it? That is so weird to say out loud that Max Verstappen did not.
Yeah,
win
we've not. It's very strange to be doing predictions and not going. And yep, P1 is Max Verstappen.
Point you just watch our Japanese Grand Prix predictions now. They are going to be off the rails. Logan Sargeant podium. Here we go. One crazy prediction. I went for all Aussies won't do well. Piastri, Ricciardo, and Bottas. Now, I actually. Getting beaten by your teammate by 30 seconds.
No, it's not a flop.
I feel like that's half a point. Because Ricciardo and Bottas both did absolutely horrendous.
Bottas beat his teammate.
Yeah, but that's because they both had 27-minute pit stops and it was just a race of who could have a worse pit stop.
No.
Come on, half a point.
No, definitely not.
You've got to appreciate. No, that's crazy. All right, fine.
My crazy prediction was Albon Q3.
That's so funny that you predicted that and my guy had to steal a car in order to go and do qualifying.
Steal a car.
I mean, in a nutshell, it's true. So no.
I did love
that.
Did you see that Alex's savage commentary on Sky that went big viral where it was Alex Albon's birthday and it came up with the graphic before qualifying, and Alex on the commentary went, Alex Albon, it's his birthday today. His present, Logan Sargeant's car.
He said that?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It's so good. Wow. Yeah, I saw it on Instagram. It had like millions and millions of likes and comments and stuff. Amazing. So funny.
Oh, Albon, he's a good lad. He's got good humour. Okay, so that is 3 points to me and 2 to you, is it?
We're even.
Okay. Ooh. So it's 7 each going into Japan.
Yes. The Massey title is on again.
We are Masseying this right now. And then, of course, finally, three crazy predictions from you, wonderful lot. If you want to get involved next time, Matt P1 Tommy on social media, go follow. And when we post the graphic, reply to it. Slosh 4000, there will be contact between Yuki and Danny. Nope, they would have to have shared the same part of the track. Frowning Freeman, Lando podium. Okay, Frowning Freeman, I see you. That's an unbelievable little prediction. And
Guess better.
And Rodaf 1899 predicted Max DNF.
The fans, haven't got any points so far.
And then
two worldy predictions there. I mean, one of them in particular, Max DNF.
What, I mean, both first of them in, are pretty sensational. But yeah, Max DNF.
Max DNF. I think first didn't time we even
joke? Didn't we joke and be like, I feel like they say it every week, but Max DNF.
I think we ended the podcast saying, like, they can't win every race. And then here we are.
And they couldn't.
Carlos Sainz goes, oh, yeah, they can't because they win.
So now we need to find out, I think, to finally sort of end this podcast, we do need to figure out who put the crisp packet in Max Verstappen's brake duct. We do need to find out who did that because surely someone's, you know, someone's gone, here you go. Here's a good race. And it wasn't. It was actually would have been better if Max had stayed in the race. So thanks for that.
I know. Shocking. Just, please, like, I just want a really banging race. Is it so much to ask for? Just give us a banger. Right? It feels like it's been too long.
It's even worse that we got baited by thinking we were going to have a four-car fight for the win, potentially.
I think Singapore baited us as well, because I think that was the thing from that race that sort of... I'm obviously like buzzing for Carlos, and it is really nice to see a new winner. But you know what I mean. It feels like a new winner when Max doesn't win now. But yeah, it would have been really cool to see. I was just praying for Charles to fight and basically have a, like, how good would a Monza have been for the win?
No, that would have been horrendous.
I don't think any Ferrari fans could have watched it.
No.
But it would have been amazing.
It's funny as well, because we were obviously thinking that might have happened, and we went on, which was incredible, last night, which would have been for you Australians this morning. We went on Channel 9 Australian National News, which was very cool.
Yes.
And I just, for banter, said, they were like, oh, so who do you think is going to be on the top step of the podium? Tommy was like, yeah, Max Verstappen, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I went, right, screw it. You know, I'm on Australian News. It's going to be Oscar Piastri. And then I pointed to my mini helmet that I've got next to me, that's Piastri's. And, you know, they were going, yeah, woo, woo. And at that point, that was, I mean, if both
we
of the
said
Ferraris
on the Twitch watch
together,
on, didn't we, that and that would have been fascinating. Oh, there's so many potential opportunities for really amazing stories there, because if they had
Piastri versus
Norris Lando for the first win,
God,
I think we needed an alternate universe where, like, it happens.
I love how we're just never happy. Like, we have a Max DNF and we're like, yeah, but what if?
What if
they were 20 wide into
Logan
turn one?
Sargeant just booted Alex Albon out of his car on the grid, got in and won the race.
Like that famous Le Mans video that, you know, that tearing him out of the cockpit. Logan just running down. Anyway, this podcast is going crazily. It's 8:10 in the morning, so we're a little bit doolally at this point. But thank you so much, everybody, for listening, for being part of this P1 fam. We really appreciate you turning up to our Twitch watch-alongs at what might have been a very unsociable hour for you. And yeah, we'll be back in a couple of weeks' time for Japan. We'll have all of our usual content going out. Remember, P1 live show tickets, if you want to come and see me and Tommy in a few weeks' time, get a little bit off the rails, then we'd love to have you there. And Tommy, final thoughts?
Final thoughts?
Yes.
I'm going to just read this tweet out that I've just seen.
Oh, okay.
And you can think it's from Chris Medland. It says, Jeddah, Carlos Sainz starts the race but doesn't get to race. Melbourne, Carlos Sainz wins. Melbourne, Logan Sargeant starts the race but doesn't get to race. Suzuka? Heard it here first.
Logan you had Sargeant to win. You had to ruin the Aussie podcast by calling it Melbourne.
I did. Oh. I was even joking the whole Twitch watch, like, I was going Melbourne.
Yeah, I know.
Melbourne.
Oh. And I heard it, I was like, oh no, we've just ruined,
you know what,
everything.
Even when we were doing the Australian news, I'm admitting my brain thoughts here. I was like, just call it Albert Park. Just call it Albert Park every time you mention it. When we were on the news, I was like, I'm going to get crucified if I call it Melbourne.
We were so tired at that point as well. I feel like we would have overthought how Albert Park was pronounced and just gone like Alberto Parque.
Alberto Park.
Anyway, that is it. Thank you, everybody. See you soon. Lots of love.
Bye.
Bye. Make sure you follow us on all of our socials. We're MattP1Tommy on Twitter, TikTok, Twitch, and Instagram. You can also sign up to our Patreon at the link in the episode notes for ad-free episodes, full video interviews, and extra bonus episodes for as little as $5 a month. Finally, make sure you're following us on Spotify. See you soon.
P1 is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.